Pacific Time. Hear the mind, heart, and soul of the progressive voice, Gary Knoll, on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the big news of the day, of course, are the job numbers for July. We'll take a look at that. I want to say a few things before that. One, the economic war that seems to be emerging and growing, as I predicted last year, between China and the U.S., focused on the text issue, of course, TikTok, and what that means and where that may be going. And I also want to talk about the status of the ongoing negotiations in Congress about the latest stimulus bill, economic stimulus bill, what that looks like, update where it's at, the significance of it. And then we'll jump into the jobs numbers. Okay. All right, so to begin with, what about this China economic war? Are we in an economic war with China? Well, we've been in an economic war with China since the beginning of the trade war, because as I said many, many times here last year, that the trade war is really an economic tech war. And the focus was always from the very beginning, in the first reports by the Department of U.S. Trade Relations in August 2017 to go after China's rising capabilities in next-generation technology, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and 5G wireless, those three, because of their military implications. And that was at the core of the trade war, which erupted in March 2018. Other issues became embroiled in the tech issue. You know, China's trade surplus with the U.S., which, by the way, 49% of which is from U.S. companies in China importing back to the U.S. And we see the problems with that, don't we? U.S. companies moved to China ever since the 1999 deal, which China gave them preferred nation trading rights, right? Ever since that allowed him into WTO, ever since that, what we see is this mass exodus of U.S. companies to China for the cheap labor and to get in under a growing, huge local market there. And we see the implications of that right now, don't we, with COVID, right? All the PPE equipment companies moved over to China, and now we didn't have enough. And they're not talking about it, but much of the PPE is coming from China. You know, they're going to have to remove those businesses back to the U.S. if we don't want to find ourselves in a crunch like this with the next pandemic, which is coming. You know, we're 21st century, age of pandemics. Yes. These viruses, you know, SARS, MERS, Ebola, whatever, COVID, not the last of them. There'll be more. And we'll see whether U.S. capitalists will be forced to come home. I doubt it. We'll be in this predicament again. Okay, so, you know, China, the rise of China in the last couple of decades, enabled by U.S. policies, offshoring, and so forth. And then we have this problem of, China starts getting good at technology. So the U.S. tries to stop them, hence the trade war. because those tech issues were really the core issues in the trade war. On top of that, you know, Trump wanted to pump up his support in his red state base, agricultural base, small manufacturing base, by getting China to buy more farm goods and getting China to buy more energy goods, particularly natural gas. Because you see, the U.S. has this massive glut of natural gas because of the fracking industry now. It's got to sell it somewhere. Because if it leaves it in the U.S., it'll drop the prices of natural gas in the U.S. and will affect the supply price, right? Drive down excess supply, drives down the price. And these fracking companies in the U.S. won't make as much money, profits off of their sales in the U.S. Got to keep that price up. Well, export that supply of gas. And Trump was counting on the Chinese to buy a whole bunch of gas, natural gas. Well, that didn't happen, did it? The trade deal. And he wanted them to buy $100 billion more a year of U.S. farm goods. That didn't happen either, because the U.S. kept insisting on that third rail of trade negotiations, which was reduce your tech development or share. The U.S. was even demanding China share its patents with the U.S. on technology. You see, there's only two countries in the world that do most, 90% of all the patents in the world. That's U.S. and China, about even 40-45% each, right? Behind that is, you know, Japan, South Korea, Germany maybe. But they're, you know, way behind. So it's a tech war. And a tech war is a military war now in the 21st century. So tech was always there in the mix, in the trade mix. And Trump was hoping that he could get more energy and agricultural trade from China and get some limitations on tech, but China wouldn't go for the tech side of this, you see, because they know that's the bread and butter of the future. And they tried to leverage, we'll buy more of your ag goods and we'll buy more gas, and you know, but we'll go do token thing on the tech. We're not giving up tech. And that's where the trade war ended last year, you see. Trump couldn't get them to really cave in on the tech side. So he settled last November, December for something on the agricultural and manufacturing and natural energy side. He took the money and run, you see, and said, oh, we'll deal with this tech in a phase two in 2020. And of course, in typical Trump fashion, you know, he overstated what the deal was, said the Chinese were going to buy $200 billion of more U.S. exports within the next 2 years, $100 billion a year. You know, and half of that, $50 billion a year, was going to be agricultural goods, and that would start right away. Right? Oh, but then this little thing called the virus hit, and that so-called overstated, publicized PR deal, which the Chinese never agreed to, by the way. China said, yeah, we'll buy more, but it depends on economic conditions. They didn't commit to a flat number. You know, they were buying $40 billion a year before the trade war with the U.S. and ag products, $40 billion. Well, then, not even buying that. Yeah, and since the COVID thing and Trump attacking China, well, what's China been doing? Well, it's buying a lot of soybeans from Brazil. Brazil can't produce enough soybeans fast enough to satisfy the Chinese demand. And it's not buying U.S. natural gas energy goods because, you know, their economy has been whacked like the U.S. and they're just not the, you know, most of that gas is industrial production. And the U.S. is going crazy. It's got all this glut of oil and gas. Oil companies, big lobbies in Washington, and in the Trump administration. You can't seem to sell all this stuff, and their prices are falling. So what does Trump do? Trump leans on Europe and says, you got to buy the gas, especially you, Germany. You're the industrial base over there. You got to buy our gas, even though it's a higher price than the Russian gas that you can get cheaper. Well, the Germans said, no, we don't like that idea. Why should we pay more? And the U.S. throws sanctions at German companies that are involved in building this new second gas pipeline from Russia, the Nord Stream, through the Baltic Sea. The U.S. trying to stop that, throwing sanctions on different companies in Germany, pissing off the Germans, of course. And why should German industry pay more for U.S. gas that you got to send to a terminal on both sides of the Atlantic, right? And then send in a special gas, natural gas, liquefied natural gas ship to Germany to a port that doesn't exist yet. U.S. said it'll build the port. That's how much they want to sell the gas to Europe. So all this attack on Germany and Merkel over there is in part due to the Germans balking at cutting off their deals with Russia for gas and not buying U.S. gas. Another area of contention with Germany is Huawei, the Chinese company Huawei, which is the leading global company in 5G wireless installations. It's much cheaper to go Huawei, but the U.S. is trying to prevent Germany from striking a deal with Huawei for 5G wireless. Well, what's the U.S. got to offer in exchange? Nada. U.S. doesn't have a 5G solution. They're using Ericsson Finland or Sweden, I forget where. Ericsson. Ericsson's 5G. Does AT&T, is it developing, a 5G wireless? You know, what about our any of the other U.S., communications company? No, AT&T is more interested in cartoons, selling cartoons and entertainment, right? They're not the tech company they used to be. Used to be number one tech company in the U.S. You know, it's a R&D arm, AT&T Labs and Western Electric. They used to be the leaders in technology, not anymore, you know. No, they're interested in content, right? So the U.S. doesn't have a 5G wireless solution. But the U.S. is saying to Germany, no, you can't have Huawei, you know? And then Trump pulls out out of NATO some, out of Germany, some U.S. troops out of Germany. What does he do with them? He sends them to Poland. Yeah, right-wing Poland government there, right? Okay, so, the trade deal flopped. It's flopped. The trade deal of December, signed December last year, is flopped. You know, hardly getting maybe 10, 20 billion, I don't know, agricultural expenditures, half of what China had, you know, maybe a little more. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but they're not there, so... That means the hardline anti-China folks on the trade team and in Trump administration see this as an opening, and they push even harder on sanctions, on technology, and so forth. Peter Navarro leading that charge. Anti-China guy. Doesn't matter what China does or doesn't do. He's anti. He's the Pentagon's and the defense military industrial complex company's lead man in the administration. Because U.S. tech industrial, well, not tech, but war producing companies don't want competition from China on tech, which is the basis of 21st century war, you see. Okay. So what we saw, was the attack on Huawei, which began even before negotiations were over there, the China 5G wireless. But now we see that's expanding to other tech companies, latest being TikTok, the app company. a lot of young folks use TikTok. That's a subsidiary of this Chinese company called ByteDance. Okay. Chinese companies are really challenging, U.S. companies, Google and Facebook and all of them, Twitter. China has a cool, not cool, but a cozy relationship with Microsoft, you see. And Microsoft has jumped in to try to mediate this dispute between Trump, right? Which is just a way of Trump saying, I'm anti-China, you know, for his election, and throwing some bones to his anti-China crowd in his administration. So Microsoft jumps in, but Microsoft has a cozy relationship with China, you see, and China, the government, isn't opposed to Microsoft taking over TikTok, buying TikTok from ByteDance. Because they have a cozy relationship with Microsoft. A lot of Microsoft senior managers, former senior managers, went back to China and started their own companies. You see, China sent these guys over here in a whole number of tech areas since 2000, right? Send them over here. They worked for American companies. They come over on L1. H1, L1 visas, right? They work for these tech companies, U.S. tech companies. U.S. tech companies like it because that's their entree when these guys go back to China. They have this cozy relationship. And Microsoft's been around a lot longer than Google or Facebook, so it has a deeper set of relationships. Same with Apple. Apple has that kind of a relationship. See, Apple and Microsoft are different in China than Google or Facebook or all the other Johnny-come-lately tech companies. So what's going to happen is they probably will sell TikTok to Microsoft. Microsoft will keep TikTok in China, where it has a major footprint in China. And it won't offer TikTok here in the U.S. It'll make Trump look good, like he drove China out, right? There's other apps now we're going to see and other China tech companies, WeChat and some of the others that are going to be an issue here. A lot of it's for publication for the election. There's even talk of delisting China companies from the U.S. stock exchanges. Now, that's a big blow. Now, that takes it out of a tech war into an economic war. And we'll see that emerge probably after the November U.S. elections, whether Trump or Biden, especially if Biden comes on. Watch this ratcheting up of the Cold War, the economic Cold War with China, and with Russia, if Biden wins. You know, you don't see the Cold War erupting with Russia while Trump is in office, because I really believe that they got some shit on Trump. I think the Russians got some videos and some stuff on Trump. That's why he's so cozy with him. And that's why, as long as Trump's there, we won't have a hot war with Russia. But, you know, Trump makes moves to placate the military-industrial complex and the Pentagon, you know, move some troops to Poland and, you know, move some radars to Poland, stuff like that. Okay. Short term, this trade economic war now with China is really short-term, an effort to pressure them to commit to buy more farm goods. Because if you look at the latest figures, we have a serious wave of bankruptcies going on right now in the farm sector. Small farmers, not the big boys. The big boys got a lot of money from Trump, you know, during the trade war. What did he get from Trump? $29 billion in subsidies. Most of it went, you know, to Archer Daniel Midland and those big guys. $29 billion as a way of keeping them corralled here while he was negotiating with China, and China wasn't buying farm goods. Can you fill their losses? $29 billion. And then I believe in the CARES Act, there's $20 billion there for subsidies to farm as well. I don't know if that's the exact number, but it's somewhere around there. So like $50 billion in direct subsidies to farmers, mostly medium and large farmers, while the small farmers go bankrupt. Well, that's the picture, you know. That's the picture in the agricultural base there, his political base. But boy, he sure sings a different tune publicly. But, you know, when you go bankrupt, you know what the story is. The last figures I saw for 2017, I think it was, but I think figures have come out for 2018 just recently. I haven't seen those, but 2017, maybe it was 18, 12,000 U.S. farmers went bankrupt. 12,000. Probably more now. We'll try to get those numbers next week. Okay. So, that's the picture with the growing economic war between U.S. and China, growing out of the trade war, which accomplished zilch for Trump here and for the U.S. economy, you know, except, you know, what the trade war did was slow down the global economy to a snail's pace, global trade, just as the virus hit and whacked it. Yeah, that's why global trade is negative for the first time in history. And it's falling faster, declining faster. It's growing less and declining more than global GDP for the first time. You know, global trade was always rising faster than global GDP. Well, it's just the opposite now. It's a sign of the global recession that we're in. Long term, the U.S. will continue confronting China on the tech issue because that's the issue of the 21st century. Well, the first half of it anyway, militarily. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, the U.S. is doing everything it can to rally India and to rally Australia against China, Vietnam, all of those who are fearful of China's growing economic power and the military power that will follow economic power. Military is what economics is what funds the military. And military is very expensive nowadays with all the technology, but you got to have funding for it. And that's economic growth, you see. If you're not growing, you don't have the surplus in order to invest in military goods. Okay. We'll watch that closely, but that will take a qualitative turn, the trade war, economic war, after the elections for sure. But in the meantime, we'll see more and more attacks on Chinese tech companies. Okay, let's go to the stimulus here that's in progress in the Congress. Stimulus 2, or what you would, you know, some people say it's the fifth stimulus. Well, not really. You know, when this whole thing erupted back in March, you had an initial $75 billion thrown at the hospitals, and then I think another $100 billion directed, you know, direct aid to medical and hospitals. And then you had the third event, which was called the CARES Act, back in the middle of March, right? And that's, you know, it ranged anywhere in the press from $2.2 trillion to $3 trillion of stimulus. And as we've said many times, you know, most of that was loans to corporations, $1.8 trillion in loans to corporations at three tiers. You know, you have the small business up to 500 employees. That's called the PPP, Payroll Protection Program, small business loans. medium-sized business loans. In other words, those that are 500 employees to 15,000, that's pretty big medium, right? That's sometimes called the Main Street Program, 600 billionaire. And then for large corporations, 500 billion, mostly airlines claiming that number right now. By the way, airlines are starting to go broke, you know. Some of the feeder intermediate airlines, you know, Frontier and others, going broke. We're going to see more of that. We're going to see mass layoffs. Tens of thousands of workers in the airline industry and hotel industry are going to go under here. They're already signaling. By the way, the airlines, you know, got $50 billion in the CARES Act of assistance, $25 billion in loans, which I'm sure are going to be forgiven at some point, and $25 billion in direct grants. And they're supposed to keep employees on their books. Supposed to use 70% of that to keep workers on their books. In other words, not lay them off. Well, now those airlines are negotiating here with the new stimulus for another $50 billion. Or they're going to lay off in September, mass layoffs right before the election. And when I say mass, I mean mass layoffs. You know, United's talking about 36,000, American 20,000, Delta, I think, 3,000 or something like that of layoffs right before the election. Well, they'll get what they need, I'm sure, once again, out of this latest stimulus. But the CARES Act was the number three, you know, $2.2 trillion, $1.8 trillion of that was, $1.78 trillion of that was loans to three tiers of business, $500 billion of that was unemployment insurance, especially the supplemental federal unemployment insurance package, $600 extra a week. Of course, you're supposed to get more. The whole intent was to give people more than what they were making so they would spend it, spend more than what they were spending. That would have been a stimulus. What's the stimulus? A stimulus is not just making up the loss of income for people that are laid off or businesses that close. That's not a stimulus. That's a mitigation. That's an attempt to keep the black hole from getting blacker or deeper. See, it doesn't stimulate the economy. It keeps it from collapsing even further than it was. CARES Act was not a stimulus bill. It was a mitigation bill. Put a floor under the collapse of spending. And by the way, consumer spending still fell by 35% in the second quarter. Business by 30, business investment by 30%. Export imports almost as much. State and local government spending declined. I mean, that's why we had a 32.9% collapse of GDP in the second quarter on an annual basis, 10% just in the quarter itself. Records, record level of contraction, second quarter, 32%, 10%, whether you're annualized or not. That's worse than the worst quarter ever during the early 1930s. Yes, it's worse. It's worse, you know. And finally, you know, there's some economists who are admitting now, oh, this is a depression, right? This, what's going on now, is not just a recession. I've been saying conservatively since March that it is another great recession, no doubt, at least that. You know, the collapse in the second quarter compared to the worst quarter in 2008-09, three times deeper and one-third of the time. So that's certainly worse than what we had in 2008-09, isn't it? Yeah. It's at least a great recession. That's why the recovery will only be W-shaped, not V-shaped. W-shaped meaning you'll get a rebound, which we've had in May, June, July, early July, And then that rebound will weaken. It may end up weakening enough so you have no growth for a couple months or quarter two, followed by another rebound, followed by another relapse and slowdown or even contraction that would give you a double dip recession. That's what a W-shaped recovery is. You bounce along the bottom for years. And that's exactly what happened in advanced economies after 2008-9. Japan had a triple dip recession. Europe had a double dip, almost a triple dip. The U.S. had a double dip. Yeah, we had a double dip, but it didn't show up in GDP numbers because they manipulated and redefined the GDP numbers to add $500 billion to it in 2013. Or we would have had a double dip then, a mild one, but we would have had a double dip. That's the nature of a great recession, you see. Short, shallow recoveries followed by short, shallow relapses, bounce along the bottom, unless you have a massive fiscal stimulus. We had great recessions before, you see. Yeah, 1908 to 13 was a great recession, bouncing along the bottom after the financial collapse of 1907. And then 1929-30 was a great recession. You see, we didn't fall into the depression all at once. We had a great recession at first after the stock market crash. But that great recession morphed into the depression of the 1930s, when we start having financial crashes. 1930, bank crash at the end of the year. 1931, another bank crash. 32, another one. 33, another one. Four banking crashes in a row in the U.S. Each time, it drove us deeper into a recession. That became a depression. Yeah, great recession can go either way. You see, you can stop the process of drift into a depression, or you can fail in stopping the process, which means you then have other financial crises, and then you fall into a bona fide depression lasting 5 to 7 years. Now, these two economists from Harvard, the Reinhardts, Carmen Reinhart and Vincent Reinhart, have recently admitted, right? Well, they think we're in a depression, which means they're going to go on for some time. And, you know, businesses are sort of reflecting that now. The big businesses are talking about mass layoffs, getting ready to restructure their companies with less workers for a long period of time, permanent layoffs coming. Yeah, not just part-time. It's not just COVID health-driven. You see, if it were just health-driven, you might get a W-shaped recovery. But this economy was very weak going into this situation. That's one of the myths, you see, perpetrated. Oh, the new normal, the old normal was pretty good, you know, last year. No, it wasn't. Go look at the data. It wasn't. It was weak and weakening. And then the COVID hit, right? And just precipitated and accelerated the contraction, made it deeper. And the deeper it goes, the longer it takes to recover. You can get a V-shape from a normal recession, but you don't get a V-shape from a deep, rapid contraction like this. It's up and down, bouncing along the bottom for quite some time. And that can continue for a very long time unless there's a massive fiscal stimulus. And we haven't had that yet. The CARES Act, as I said, $3 trillion announced. Only about $1.4 trillion of that actually got into the economy. You know, the $500 billion that's been spent, you know, for the unemployment supplements and the checks, that's spent. And the small business loans, which were gamed by larger businesses in a whole number of ways, which I'm writing about. Check out my blog, jackerasmus.com, next week. How the big businesses have gamed, in other words, manipulated the loans for small business. Okay, you know, that was about, well, they've allocated $660 billion for that, but they've only spent $520 billion of it. They'll probably extend that to the end of the year and add some to it. Because, you know, a lot of small companies did not get it. Did not get it, especially minority companies. They got the least and they needed it the most, probably. You know, if you look at some of the statistics coming out now, right? 22% of small businesses have gone out of business. 22%. 17% white. 32% of them black. 41% of these Hispanic or Latinx, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, so disproportionately, you know, minorities and lower income groups are getting whacked the most by this. And it's true with the unemployment, too. It's mostly them, disproportionately, who are among the unemployed. It's mostly them, disproportionately, who are among the renters who are getting evicted. It's mostly them, disproportionately, who are dying from this thing. Yeah. So, about $1.5 trillion of the $3 trillion CARES Act has not even gotten into the economy. So it's not been much of a stimulus, you know. It's been, you know, put a floor, the collapse would have been even worse in the second quarter in terms of income for working and middle class folks. It would have been worse if they didn't have the $500 billion and the PPP for small businesses as only partially effective as it has been. Only $1.5 trillion. I've been saying all along since March, you need $4 trillion of stimulus. You need to double the government spending share of GDP from 20% to 40%. That's what we did in 1941. That was a war economy. And that's what got us out of the Depression. Well, we're at war with the virus, right? But where's our commander-in-chief? Oh, he's on a golf course in Florida somewhere. Or he's sitting up in his bedroom in the White House tweeting all night long. Or he's doing press conferences to see how often he could stick his foot in his mouth. No leadership there. There's no commander-in-chief. He's the commander-in-chief. He's dropped his rifle and he's running in the opposite direction. You see, there's no leadership there at all. Because he believes the private enterprise can do it all, right? Just throw money, big time, billions of dollars at these pharma companies, far more than they're going to use or need to develop their viruses, if they ever, vaccines, if they ever do. Yeah, we've thrown billions at each company to try to quickly develop a virus. We'll see how that turns out. That's part of the boondoggle going on. Yeah. You know, if it was a real war economy, we would have, government would have done it. Not relied on the private sector. The government would have done it. Would have seized one of these companies, you know, grabbed it and restructured it and said, okay, all you guys are going to do is virus work. Drop all your other pharmaceutical product projects, right? We're going to hire the best from everywhere, pay them whatever we need, and we're going to do this thing. That would have been a war production answer. And we would have said immediately, okay, what companies here can produce PPE? Okay, you know, we're going to take you over and make sure you do produce PPE. Instead of relying on stuff from China. Oh, but did you hear? Trump announced he gave Kodak, the company Kodak, $769 million to start producing some kind of PPE or drugs. I forget what. Chemicals. I didn't read that totally, but I did read the fact that the day before it was announced, the executives at Kodak bought a whole bunch of stock. Kodak Kodak stock. So the next day, big capital gains, right? The stock went way up when the announcement of the government loan to Kodak to produce this equipment. Oh, they made a big killing, didn't they? Isn't that inside trading? Yes. I mean, shouldn't the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, investigate that? Well, sure. But that's just the tip of the iceberg of what's going on with these pharma companies and the money the government's throwing at them. Well, we'll see how that turns out. But that's just another example of the gaming of the system going on by big companies. Okay, back to the negotiations on the stimulus here. What do we got? Well, we need $4 trillion. We've only spent $1.4 trillion in the CARES Act in March, and that's only a mitigation. That didn't stimulate anything. So now we need a real stimulus bill here because the rebound, the economic rebound, is weakening. After mid-July, indicators are beginning to pop up to show that whether it's jobs or output or whatever, that the growth is slowing down. You see, a recovery is a sustained increase, sustained. It rises with each report, right? Each month gets better and better. That's sustained. That's recovery. Rebound is, you're coming off the floor. So you're bound to get some improvement, but the improvement is so tepid, so weak, it can't continue the momentum. That's a rebound. And we've been having a rebound since June, maybe even late May in some of these states that never really closed down. But as of mid-July, the last 3 weeks, warning signs beginning to appear. I'll read my article on that on my blog, jackrasmus.com. Right. U.S. Second quarter GDP collapses and third quarter rebound fading. Okay, it's the early stage of the fade. We'll see. You know, maybe they'll turn it around with this announcement of the next stimulus, if it is truly a stimulus, but it doesn't look like it's going to be to me. You know, the Democrats passed in June the HEROES Act, as they called it, that provided for $3 trillion. And there's a lot of good provisions in that, I think. You know, they want to continue the $600 supplemental unemployment benefits. They want another round of income checks, $1,200 each, right? There's $100 billion there keep people in their rents in their homes. You know, I've seen estimates anywhere from 12.3 million to 22 million people are going to be evicted. Do you think those folks are going to spend more money if they're evicted? Not likely. Do you think rising unemployment claims mean those people are going to spend more money if you don't continue the unemployment benefits? Not really. What about the 8 to 10 million people who it's estimated are among the 30 to 40 million unemployed who have no health insurance now? If we had Medicare for all, it would be a simple thing. They wouldn't lose anything. But they don't even want to talk about that. Even the Democrats don't want to talk about that. How disgusting is it? Well, only country in the world, an advanced economic country in the world, that doesn't have some kind of national health insurance or health plan. Only country. Why? Because you got this massive, super profitable lobby of pharma companies, medical instrument companies, for-profit hospitals, health insurance companies, who throw hundreds of millions of dollars at the millionaires in Congress. Yes, and they're mostly millionaires. You know, not to vote for that. Yeah. So we got 8 million people, 8 to 10 million people of the unemployed have no insurance at all. Nothing. More. You know, we always had at least 40 million of those. Now we got 8 million, 8, 10 million more. You think they're going to spend, you know, as they get laid off? No. There's a big hole there in consumption, which is 70% of the economy, that has to be filled before you can spend on top of that to stimulate the economy. You see, you got to distinguish between filling up the hole to get back to where you were and stimulating the economy beyond that. Okay, so what's the status? You know, the HEROES Act, $3 trillion, a lot of good measures in there. $100 billion for state and local governments, who, by the way, are going to start laying off massively here if we don't give them something. I've seen estimates that they'll need $969 billion through 2021 in order to prevent layoffs. But Republicans don't want to provide anything to state and local governments because most of those who need it the most are in blue states. This is part of their let's stick it to the blue states, McConnell strategy. Stick it to the blue states, right? Maybe people get pissed off enough they won't come out and vote for Democrats. That's what this is about in Congress, where McConnell doesn't want to give anything to state and local governments. Yeah, that's what it's about. Maximize the turnout in the red states to get those electoral votes, minimize with voter suppression and all these other tactics, right? And minimize the turnout if you can by making conditions so disruptive in the blue states. Not just economically disruptive, you know. I mean, just send your DHS new stormtroopers to the Democratic cities, right? That's what that's about. There's a whole strategy in the Trump administration against the blue states. Yeah. This president is not the president of the United States of America. He's the president of the red states of America. Always has been. From the very beginning. Okay, so the Republicans come out in early July with their counter to the HEROES $3 trillion stimulus called the HEALS Act. HEALS, H-E-A-L-S, $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. And at first they said, oh, only $200 billion, $200 a week for the supplemental unemployment benefits. And we're going to cut it from 600 to 200. Well, you know, those supplemental unemployment benefits bring in $85 billion a month in GDP consumer spending. And yes, the unemployed spend everything. Unlike middle class folks who are still working, you know, who get the $1,200 checks, you know, they're using it to pay down their debts. Same with business. Get bailed out. They use it to pay down their debts, unless they're one of these small businesses going out of business. Okay, latest I've heard is that they are changing, the Republicans have conceded, we'll raise that to $400 a week. And they're still negotiating that. But no extension on rents, the rent moratorium. You know, millions of people are going to be thrown out, are being thrown out already because it's already expired. They don't want to spend that. For about $7.8 billion a month, you can keep everybody in their rents. Yeah. So, you know, 6 months, $50 billion. That's about what we gave the defense companies, $50 billion. They didn't need it, by the way, but we gave it to them, right? That's in the Republican bill, $29 billion more in their latest proposal, on top of the $20 billion they got in the CARES Act in March. $50 billion for those guys who don't need it, but we can't spend $50 billion to keep people in their homes, in their apartments? No. And then, you know, there's this other freebie called the retention tax credit. Exist in the March CARES Act, $55 billion for employers not to lay people off. Well, that's just a gift because, you know, they'll say, I was going to lay them off, but give me the money and I won't lay them off. And maybe they weren't going to lay them off anyway. That's a freebie, $55 billion. Well, in the latest bill, here, negotiations, going to raise that by $194 billion more. Raise the retention tax credit, $250 billion in 1 year. And it's just a gimme. You get it. Just say you want it. You get it. Well, that's why, you know, the Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, are balking at this payroll tax cut that Trump wants. By the way, business already got the payroll tax cut in the March CARES Act. It's just that it's deferred, you see. They're going to have to pay it back by the end of 2021. What Trump is saying and wants is that, oh, you don't have to pay it back. We'll give it to the workers, too, because the workers are still paying their share, you see. It's just their businesses that aren't paying. Deferred. I mean, it's not guaranteed you won't have to pay it back, but they won't pay it back. But now they want to up that by almost $200 billion. Well, you can't do that and cut payroll taxes. I mean, the retention tax credit is much more lucrative than the payroll tax cut for business. Okay, so that's some of the status of where things are. Okay. Let's go to the jobs number here. We got about 10 minutes. I want to talk about the jobs numbers that just came out today. All right, consider this. There's two kinds of numbers you got to think about. One are the new unemployment claims, those first-time unemployment claims that are reported every Thursday. How many people the preceding week filed for unemployment benefits for the first time? And then on Friday, the first Friday of the month, you get the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Labor Department numbers on jobs. Okay, so you got unemployment claims. Certainly everybody who's getting unemployment benefits is unemployed, right? But there's actually more people unemployed because many are not getting benefits. They may have either run out of the benefits or they filed for them and they haven't got them yet. They haven't figured out how to do it yet. Or they just dropped out of the labor force. If you drop out of labor force, you're not looking for work. Therefore, you can't get benefits because condition of benefits, you got to be out of work and looking for work, you see. So the total number of unemployed is greater than those on unemployment benefits. And every Thursday, those numbers come out. Now, for 20 consecutive weeks, that number has been 2 million or more. 2 million. What you hear in the press is, oh, just the 1 million or 1.2 or 1.3 million, 1.4 week before last, and 1.2 here just announced yesterday. Well, that's only for the state unemployment benefit system, you see, because with the CARES Act, we have a federal unemployment benefit system on top of the state. That's the $600. The federal is the $600 on top of the state. That's for benefits that were never given before to gig workers and independent contractors, of which we have tens of millions, at least 10 million independent contractors, gig workers, so forth. Right, they're getting unemployment for the first time since March. That's the $600. That's all they're getting, you see, just the $600, which doesn't even come close to their full losses of income. All right, you add those two up every Thursday. It's over 2 million people filing, getting unemployment for the first time for 20 consecutive weeks. Oh, 20 weeks over 2 million, that's 40 million people, right? Okay, some of them have dropped off. Some of them have gotten jobs. Some dropped out of the labor force. Some of them have gotten jobs. And both of those numbers have gone up. The numbers dropping out of the labor force and people getting jobs. How many got jobs? Well, if you look at the monthly reports from the BLS, depends what table you look at, right? The last 3 months, according to Table 815, I think it is, May, 2.7 million net jobs created. June, 4.8 million. July, that's today for July, 1.7 million. Oh, went way down from 4.8 to 1.7. It's slowing down. That's one of the indicators of a possible fading of the rebound. And consider this. The 1.7 million for July is only through the first 2 weeks of July. You see, these numbers don't count the last 2 weeks where we have a growing number of new unemployment claims. Yeah, 1.342 million, right, for the state. And then it's been over almost a million for the PUC, the supplemental federal unemployment filings. Except last week, it's down to 655,000. Oh, only 655,000 of independent workers, independent contractors and gig workers. Only 650,000. Well, that's as bad as the worst month during the 2008-09 Great Recession. And that's only the supplemental employment program. On average, it's been way over, you know, at one point in March, it was like 6 million in 1 week. 40 million people been unemployed. Yeah, maybe 35 million now. If you don't count those 5 million or so who dropped out of the labor force altogether, we've been consistently 35 to 40 million people without jobs for 20 consecutive weeks. And they say, the report came out today to say, oh, the unemployment rate dropped to 10.2% from 11.1 last month. But as I've said so many times on this show and written so many times, that's only what's called the U-3 unemployment rate, which is full-time workers. When you add up all the part-time temp workers and related categories, you know, it's still 16.5% unemployment. 16.5. But if you look at all the unemployment claims, it's like 25% unemployment. 23, 25 still. So there's a gap there between 16.5 and 23 million unemployed. Or 23%, rather. Okay. Now, some of that, big part of that is people who dropped out of the labor force, which the government does not fully pick up accurately, I believe. So you got these two sources. You know, one says we've got 35 to 40 million people without jobs. Not all of them collecting unemployment benefits, but you know, maybe 4/5 of them. And then you got this other number coming out of the Labor Department that says, oh, only 10% unemployment rate, which would be, you know, on a labor force of 150,000, 10%. Well, maybe it's 160, 150. You know, let's say 150 for calculations purposes. That'd be 15, 16 million people unemployed. Well, the actual number of people who are still getting unemployment benefits is not 16 million. It's 32 million just getting benefits. But the government says there's only 16 million unemployed. Well, that's the U3, you know, unemployment rate that's only full-time. But that's all that you hear in the media, don't you? That's all you hear. Oh, 11%, 10% unemployment rate. They cherry pick the lowest ball number to make it look good. And, you know, it really irks me that progressives and others keep parroting that low ball cherry pick number of 10%, 11%. They ought to know better. All you got to do is pick up the report and look. Even their own damn report says 16.5%, which puts you over 20 million people, 20, 25 million people. Even their own report, the government's own report, just read two categories, two lines down, and you'll see 16.5%. But even that report doesn't count people who have left the labor force, you see. So it's even far more, you know. Plus, keep in mind this, that in the 4 million or whatever, 2 million jobs that were created, right, last month, 900,000 of those are part-time workers. So, you know, they're being called back, but working only part-time, and that's why the wages are falling, you see. Okay. We'll talk to you next week. We'll see what the stimulus bill is or isn't.